giving Danny a shove to let him know he was playing. "If we pull this thing off," Richie said, "maybe it'll be enough for us to win the championship of all the kids who got told they weren't good enough." Danny said, "But all the good players are taken."
"No," Richie Walker said, "they're not."
Danny looked up at the standing grandfather clock that belonged to some grandparent and saw that it was past 10 o'clock now, past bedtime. His mom hadn't said anything about that, at least not yet. Maybe because she was getting into it about the Middletown cocktail napkins the way the boys were. It had turned into another night Danny didn't want to end. Now she was the one who said, "I know there are still good players out there, present company certainly included, but Danny's right. Are there enough so it doesn't turn out to be Danny and the Bad News Bears?" Danny started ticking off names on his fingers. "There's me, Bren, Will. Richie. Can Will play? Danny. He can make an open shot, and he can defend almost as well as he can talk. Richie. Could he start with you in the backcourt? Danny. Bren's better." He saw his mother's head going back and forth like she was watching a tennis match, a grin on her face, even though it was basketball talk, which she said usually was about as riveting for her as interest rates at the bank. "Just not tonight." Danny said,
"The only really big guy left is Matt Fitzgerald. He's already wearing size 13 kicks, but he needs to be coached."
His dad said, "You know what I say."
The three of them at once, as if they'd rehearsed it, said, "You can't teach tall."
When they stopped laughing, Danny said,
"That's only 4 guys.
"We don't need to come up with a whole list of possibles tonight," his dad said. "Over the next day or so, try to think of all those fabulous bubble guys Jeff Ross talked about, or maybe some kids who didn't try out. All we need is 10, tops, and we could play with 8.
"I'll ask around," Danny said.
Allie said, "I don't want to throw cold water on this, but leagues cost money, Rich. Teams like this cost money, and not just for the gym." He shrugged, held up a napkin. "I've got some thoughts on that. Hell, everybody's got a salary cap these days. Ours might just have to be a little lower than everybody else's." He started to get up. And for a moment, it was as if he had forgotten how many busted parts he still had. He got halfway up before making a face, then started the whole process again, this time putting a hand on the coffee table to steady himself, then taking it much more slowly from there. Danny wanted to help him, just wasn't sure how.
"Sweet dreams, kiddo," he said to Danny.
Danny thinking, "You can say that again." The two of them were still outside, standing next to his car. Danny had snuck down the stairs once they were outside, gone out the back door, got behind where the garbage cans were, and eavesdropped on his parents like he was on a stakeout. His mom was saying,
"You can't start this and not follow through."
"You mean like my jobs?"
"I mean with everything.
I can do this."
"No," she said. "Now you have to do this."
"Okay," he said. "I can do this. I have to do this. I will do this.
Because if you don't, you really will break this boy's heart this time."
Small silence.
"Hell, Allie, this is about his heart.
You know you're not going to get any help from the association. Thinking outside the box in this town can get you arrested. Screw 'em if they can't take a good joke.
There's the old Rich."
"Listen," he said, "I know I'm not much of a parent, not a parent at all most times, but the more I listened to Jeff Ross, the more it occurred to me that my ass is just worn out having guys who can't find their own jockstraps running sports at any freaking level."
"I'll help any way I can."
"Figured."
"You can pull this off?"
she said. It came out a question.
"We're sure as hell gonna find out," his dad said.
Chapter 10.
"Well, okay,"
Will Stoddard said, looking around the basketball court at St. Pat's, 8 o'clock the next Saturday morning.
"We're looking to assemble the first all-guard basketball team in history. Plus Matt,"
Bren Darcy said, correcting him.
"Plus Matt,"
Danny said, "just so's people won't get the idea we're a sixth-grade team."
"I've seen sixth-grade teams bigger than us,"
Will said. Danny and Will had written up flyers and left them around both Springs and St. Pat's, announcing tryouts for a new 7th-grade travel team this Saturday. Will, who said he knew more about computers than Bill Gates, had even figured out a way to set up a temporary website, though the website basically had the same information as the flyers. The largest type on the page announced that this was all at the invitation of Coach Richie Walker, Middletown's most illustrious basketball alumnus. Will had thrown in the last part. They had left flyers at the candy kitchen and Jackson's stationery store and Fiero's and on the bulletin board they still kept in the lobby of the Middletown movie theater. After all that, 8 kids showed up. Danny, Bren, Will, Matt Fitzgerald, who didn't just look tall, he was also as wide as one of those double-wide trailers at the trailer park outside of town when he stood next to the rest of them. Michael Harden, another decent St. Pat's kid. He was another 55-incher who'd given up on trying out for the real travel team the year before. There was one Springs kid, Oliver Town, a round black kid known to his classmates as the Round Mound of Town, a play on words that came from Charles Barkley's old college nickname, the Round Mound of Rebound. Oliver was a little taller than Danny, but not by much. Danny actually thought Oliver took up about the same space horizontally as he did vertically, as if every inch taller he got also became an inch wider. Will used to call him Roker, because he was as fat as the weatherman on the Today Show used to be, but that was before the Today guy did that deal where he had his stomach stapled shut. Will always seemed to know stuff like that, believing that most useful information in his life came from People magazine. Whatever Oliver Town weighed, he was the closest thing to an actual forward in the gym. Finally, there were the only twins at St. Patrick's School, Robert and Stephen O'Brien, who announced to the other kids they were only there because their mom had made them. She told us that if we weren't going to play hockey this year because we were tired of getting up at 5 in the stupid morning, we were going to do something, Robert said. Or it could have been Stephen. Danny was never completely sure which was which. The only ones who seemed to be able to tell the O'Brien kids apart were the O'Brien twins. The other twin said, "She said our winter sports schedule wasn't going to consist of us sitting on our skinny butts and playing video games." Danny took a quick survey of his teammates and in his head heard one of those NBA arena announcers shouting,
"Give a big Middletown welcome to your Middletown cocktail napkins!"
Now, if they could scare up a couple of more players, maybe they could even scrimmage. Danny's dad hadn't made much of a speech when he realized the 8 players in the gym were the only ones coming. He addressed the kids and a few of the parents who'd hung around to listen. Michael Harden's dad, Jerry, had played with Richie Walker on the championship 7th-grade team, even if he looked a lot older now, having gone bald and put on a few since his playing days. He was a lawyer in Middletown, and after he gave Richie a hug, he asked if he needed any help. "All I can get," Richie said. "I can help coach, I can make calls, I can organize a phone list, you name it," he said. "All of the above," Richie said. Then he told the kids that if they were here today, it meant they had a passion for playing ball, and he'd always had a soft spot for guys like that. And told them that maybe, if he managed not to screw them up, they could all have a basketball season that was a lot more than a consolation prize. His dad said, "Danny knows I'm the last guy who ever wants to give a speech. But bottom line here, maybe, just maybe, we can turn out to be the kind of team nobody wants to play." One of the O'Briens raised a hand. "Mr. Walker, how do we do that if we don't even have enough players to play each other?" "What's your name, son?" "Stephen O'Brien." He was in the red t-shirt. It meant Robert was in black. He motioned the other twin over. "And your name, son?"
"Robert."
Richie looked hard at one face, then the other, stood back. To the red-shirted Stephen, he said, "I think you've got a few more freckles than your twin brother there, Stephen, though that's not going to help me a whole lot when you're out on the court, so we're going to have to ask you to color-code each other at every practice." They both nodded. "We switch t-shirts sometimes when our mother leaves a room."
"Zany," Will said.
"Anyway," Richie said, "I'll tell Robert and Stephen and the rest of you that by the time we're ready to get serious here, hopefully, we'll have found a couple of more players. If not, Mr. Harden and I will play when we want to go 5-on-5. Danny stared at his dad. Because as far as he knew, the last time Richie Walker had played in any kind of basketball game was with the Golden State Warriors.
One last thing before we start, his dad said. There's only going to be 3 basic rules on this team, and I'm going to expect you all to follow them. 1, if you're open, shoot. 2, if somebody has a better shot than you, pass the ball, let him shoot. 3, have fun. He looked from face to face. Did I go too fast for anybody?
Will had to get the last word, of course.
What if we're missing our shots?
Richie said, keep shooting. That will be rule number 4. Now get in 2 lines and let's see what we got here.
Nothing, Danny decided after the first hour. They had nothing. They were either hopeless or helpless. He could go either way. He kept thinking that if the Vikings could see them, they'd think they were trying to get on one of those funniest home video television shows. Even the guys who could play couldn't play dead today. Danny knew that Will and Bren especially, knew how to run a 3-man weave fast break drill the way they knew their own screen names. They'd all had to run the weave for any team they'd ever played for in their lives. Just not today. Not to save their lives. And when they'd mess it up again, his dad would just look at them calmly, no problem, and say, same group, let's try it again. One time, Matt was the last guy to get the ball, which meant he was supposed to shoot the layup. Only the pass from Michael Harden was too low, and Matt had about as much chance of reaching down and catching it and then shooting it as he did of getting a good grade in Spanish. But he did manage to drop-kick the ball off the court and up onto the stage. Will immediately imitated one of those Spanish soccer announcers you heard during the World Cup.
Goal!
Even Richie Walker, whom Danny knew wasn't exactly the life of the party in the best of times, laughed at that one. To keep from crying, most likely. When Richie said they were going to try 4-on-4, full court, push the ball every chance you got, Danny thought things might get better, even though nobody had the height to guard Matt. Instead, they got worse. Even I stink today, Danny thought. He kept checking out the old clock above the stage, knowing his dad had said they would only go to 10 o'clock today. Danny praying that none of the play practice kids would come early and see a team that he was now thinking of more as the Middletown Rugrats, one that had scrimmaged for more than half an hour and managed to produce exactly 5 baskets, 3 for his team, 2 for Bren's. Danny had all the baskets for his team, Bren had the 2 for his. He might have been slightly off with his math, but there had also been about 6,000 turnovers. Richie Walker finally put 2 fingers to his mouth and gave a sharp whistle, told them all they were done for the day and to come to the middle of the court.
We suck,
Danny said under his breath to Will. Will said,
you're being much too easy on us.
Danny told Will his Rugrats line, and Will said,
if you remember the show, I'm pretty sure Phil and Lil are bigger.
Richie Walker knelt down in the middle of them. When he did, he had to put his right hand out to keep himself steady, or from falling over on his side. Maybe those weren't sad eyes on his dad as much as they were hurt eyes. Richie said, before anybody starts to get down on himself, remember, this was our first practice. Wasn't even a practice, really, as much as it was, like, orientation. So hang in there, okay? Then he said, hey, the team I played on, the one that won, our coach threw us out of the gym 3 times the first month we were together. Jerry Harden nodded. I think it was 4, actually. One of the O'Brien twins raised a hand. Are we going to practice this week? We need to know because we got piano. Will, whispering into Danny's ear, said,
maybe they can play piano.
Richie Walker's response was a sigh. Then he turned and looked at the clock. They sat in front of 422 Earl for a few minutes after his dad drove him home from practice.
You could come in, Danny said, if you want.
I've got some calls to make when I get back to the inn. It's a big job. 2 jobs, actually, being both general manager and coach in travel basketball.
Danny could see his mom's blue Taurus in the driveway. Somehow he could feel her watching them from somewhere inside the house. maybe even hearing what they were saying. He liked to tell her that she had the kind of mutant hearing that could have landed her a spot fighting crime with the X-Men. There was just nothing much to hear right now in the front seat of the rental car. Until... Dad? Why are you doing this? Richie turned in the front seat so he could face him, forgetting that the shoulder harness from his seatbelt was still attached. He caught himself when he felt the pull of it, but even a sudden stop like that made him wince in pain. Why are you asking, bud?
Because you don't even like basketball anymore. You didn't like coaching, even though you're trying to make this sound like something you couldn't live with yourself if you passed up.
That's why.
Deep breath.
Keep going.
Danny said, The only reason you play with me in the driveway when you show up is because it's a way for us to have some kind of common language that doesn't involve us talking.
He shot him a look to see how that one went over. His dad was actually smiling, like Danny had gotten off a good shot.
Swish.
You're pretty smart for 12, his dad said.
Smarter than I was, that's for sure.
Whatever.
Richie said, Can I talk now?
Of course you can.
I don't hate basketball, Richie said.
Do I hate what happened to me?
Yeah.
Do I spend most of my life feeling sorry for myself?
Yeah, I do, though I'm trying to cut down. I really hate what happened to me, that I never got the chance to find out how I stacked up against the big boys. And I did hate coaching the first time around. College boys with their attitudes, so I could have run circles around when I was their age.
His dad was the one who took a deep breath now. Letting it go.
Dad, I didn't mean...
Richie carefully turned himself back around, so he was facing forward, those big hands on the steering wheel.
I hate that I don't have the game in my hands anymore, or ever again. But I don't hate the game, bud, and I never will.
His dad never talked about the car accident that nearly killed him. Never, never, never. This was as close as he ever got, what losing control of his car on the wet road had done to him, how it made him feel, the whole thing feeling as if it were right next door to them.
But why do you want to coach us?
Danny said.
We're going to stink.
You don't know that. And I have to say, if you act like you're giving up after just one practice, the other guys are going to do the exact same thing and we're all wasting our time here.
I'm not giving up.
I watched you today, Dan. You're the only one who acted like he hated basketball every time you or somebody else would screw up.
Yeah,
Danny said, knowing he sounded just like his father.
Yeah,
Richie said.
And you can't let it happen again because I need you. Because I'm going to put this team in your hands, give you more responsibility than you ever had in your life.
Out of the corner of his eye, Danny saw his mom standing on the front porch waving at them.
What if I'm not good enough? He said.
Richie said, No, it was the other guys who told you you're not good enough.
Danny sat there.
It was a bad day.
Let me tell you something I learned the hard way, Richie said. There's no such thing as a bad day if you're playing, on a team you weren't supposed to be on, in a season you weren't even supposed to have.
We weren't supposed to have.
There you go. Go take a shower and tell your mom I'll give her a call later and talk about the availability of the gym.
Danny was going to tell him he loved him. The words were right there, ready to spill all over the dashboard. But he didn't, because he never did. He just got out and ran for the front door, trying to bluff his mom by looking happy. It wouldn't occur to him until later that his dad still hadn't really explained why he was doing it.
Chapter 11.
They practiced twice more during the week, each one a little less awful than the first one, but not by much. It was the Saturday of Veterans Day weekend, most of the town at the parade. They had to practice in the morning today, insanely early in the morning, 7 o'clock, because the theater had been taken over by the science fair and the drama club kids needed the gym at 9. Mr. Harden was playing on the Skins team with Will and Bran and Matt. Danny's dad was moving stiffly around for Danny's team, the Shirts, pretending he was playing center, just as a way of putting a bigger body on Matt in the scrimmage and making the sides look even. Matt Fitzgerald moved about as fast as a traffic jam on the Long Island Expressway, So even though the best Richie Walker could do was limp jog up and down the court himself, they could sort of keep up with each other. They were about 45 minutes into what was half game and half practice, Danny's dad stopping them every few minutes to give them one more variation on the offense he wanted them to use against a man-to-man. It was then that Danny spotted Ty Ross standing just inside the double doors at the opposite end from the stage. He was in his baggy white shorts down to his knees, new McGrady blue and white sneakers you could spot from a mile away, a Middletown High t-shirt with the sleeves cut off, Ty apparently wanting to show off arms as skinny as his legs. Danny gave him the chin-up nod. Ty did the same back. When Richie Walker spotted Ty, he told everybody to take a water break and relax for a minute. Danny and his dad walked over to Ty, Danny saying, "You must be in the wrong gym, dude." "Hey, Ty," Richie said. "Mr. Walker?" Ty ducked his head. "My mom was on her way over to Springs. She has to help them set up for some auction or something tonight. I was supposed to help her, but then I remembered that you guys practice early on Saturday." He grinned. "She sort of gave me a reprieve." They all stood there for a moment, nobody knowing what to say about that. Then Richie said, "You want to play some?" "Would that be okay?" Ty said. Richie said, "If it's okay with your mom." "She's cool." Danny said, "What about your dad?" Ty looked down at the McGrady's, the left one untied. He was wearing those socks that barely made it above the top of your high tops. "He's playing tennis right now." Richie put a hand on his shoulder. "It's just basketball, son, but I don't want you to get into trouble with your father. My mom said that as long as it was okay with you, it was okay with her. The Vikings don't practice until next Tuesday." "Well, then thank you for coming, Ty, because you may have saved a broken-down old man's life. You play with Danny, and I am going to sit my worn-out butt down." Then he changed the teams around a little, stacking the other guys, making it Will, Bren, Matt, Michael Harden, and his dad. He put Oliver Town and the O'Brien twins with Danny and Ty. "Let's play some damn ball," Richie Walker said. They started over, jumping it at center court, Ty against Matt. Ty back-tipped the ball to Danny, and as soon as he did, Danny gave him the eye, Ty breaking toward their basket, Danny feeding him perfectly, Ty catching the long pass on one bounce and laying the ball in off the backboard. As they ran back to set up on defense, Ty changed lanes so he could give Danny a quick low five. He was smiling over the play, as if they'd drawn it up beforehand. Danny wasn't. "He's not the one in the wrong gym," Danny thought. "I am." When practice was over, Ty used Will's ever-present cell to call his mother and ask if he could go with Will over to Danny's house. Most of the other kids had beat it out of the gym when Richie had said they were done for the day. A bad sign, Danny knew, for a bunch of guys who were supposed to be there because of their burning love of the game. Of course, the only reason Danny'd had any fun was because he'd had Ty to pass to. Ty said he was getting a busy signal on his mom's phone, but she was probably on her way, since her shift at Springs ended at 9, and there was a better chance of her robbing the King Cullen supermarket than there was of her being late for anything. So they were all standing outside in front of the gym, Danny, his dad, Ty, Will, waiting for Mrs. Ross, when Mr. Ross pulled up in his black Mercedes, left the car in the fire lane that was really just a drop-off spot in front of the gym, came up the stairs fast at them, taking the last steps two at a time. "What's he doing here?" He was talking to Richie about Ty, as if Ty weren't even there. Richie said, "You should probably ask Ty that." "I'm asking you," he said, pointing a finger at Richie, not quite touching him, but getting it up there near his face. "Ty showed up, and it was lucky he did, because we're short players. I asked if it was all right, and he said that his mom said it was. She's the one who dropped him off." "My wife," Mr. Ross said, "doesn't make our son's basketball decisions for him." Danny wasn't as interested in Ty's dad as he was in his own, wanting to see how he was going to play this. Mr. Ross bossing him now the way he liked to boss everybody else in town. "You're making a big deal out of nothing," Richie said, standing his ground, not backing up, keeping his voice calm. putting his eyes on Mr. Ross and calmly keeping them there. He doesn't belong here.
He's 12, Richie said. If he can find a game on a Saturday morning, he ought to be allowed to play in it, you ask me.
Mr. Ross said, You think I can't see what you're doing here?
You mean other than getting up to 10 kids so we could scrimmage?
Dad,
Ty said,
Stay out of this.
Richie said, Come on, Jeff. He didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. I told him that if he doesn't have a conflict with your team, he can practice with our team anytime he wants to.
Then Richie said,
And backing up a second, what do you think I'm doing here?
You've made it abundantly clear by putting this team of yours together that you think some grave injustice was done to the kids who didn't make the cut. Well, I don't. And I don't want the other kids on the Vikings to even get the idea from my son that they have some sort of alternative if they don't like the way things are going.
Richie Walker barked out a laugh.
You think I'm, like, recruiting your kid?
Danny stood there, not moving, barely breathing, curious to see when Mr. Ross, the most important guy in Middletown, was going to figure out what a jackass he was making of himself in front of them, in front of his son.
You just coach your little team, and I'll coach mine, he said.
He took Ty by the arm now and said,
Let's go.
Danny was afraid that Ty was the one about to cry over basketball. But he didn't.
Richie said, Why don't you go easy on the boy?
Mr. Ross stopped, turned around, nodding, a phony smile on his face.
You know, he said, there's nothing I like better than getting parenting advice from the experts.
He and Ty went down the stairs to the car. When they got there, Mr. Ross stood on the passenger side and opened the door, waiting there until Ty was inside. When the car was gone, Danny said to his dad,
He was pretty angry.
And his dad said, Only for the last 20 years or so.
Chapter 12.
Danny imagined the scene at the Ross house afterward being something out of one of those SmackDown wrestling shows, but Ty called the next morning and asked if Danny wanted to do something.
I thought you'd be under house arrest until Thanksgiving or something, Danny said. Now you get to do something with me?
It was a mom deal, he said.
Then they put both their moms on the phone and told them to work it out.
Hey, Lily, Allie Walker said when Danny handed her the portable, then chatted with Lily Ross for a few minutes before she put her hand over the phone and said, Do you want Ty to come here or do you want to go to his house?
Danny waved his arms in front of him as if he'd been attacked by bees.
It's like going to the big house. No way, Mom, here, definitely.
Mrs. Ross, who seemed way too nice to be married to who she was married to, brought Ty over after lunch. The two moms went into the kitchen for coffee and gossip, while Danny and Ty went upstairs and began putting together their own super teams on NBA 05, where the object was to have a final score of about 188 to 186.
Danny said, How did you get to come over?
He was on the bed with his controller, Ty slouched in a beanbag chair on the floor with his.
Ty said, They had a big fight about it that lasted into the night. She said I could play with who I wanted to play with. He asked whose side she was on, his or your dad's. She said she wasn't aware there were different sides on everybody's children being happy. One of those.
My parents fight like that sometimes, Danny said. But that's because they're only together sometimes.
Ty said,
Your team has my dad pissed, that's for sure, dude.
Danny paused the game.
You've seen us. You think your team has anything to worry about? He thinks your dad is trying to show him up.
I don't think it's like that. I think my dad, like, thinks this is something he had to do for me, even though he didn't.
Ty said,
You guys just need a couple more players. You'll be pretty good.
Danny said,
I know who the players are, too. Shaq and Duncan.
Really? You just need one guy to catch and shoot and one guy to rebound.
Like I said, Shaq and Duncan.
Danny unpaused the game. In a soft voice, one you could barely hear over the PlayStation crowd noises in the bedroom, Ty said,
Dude, I'd rather play on your team.
Danny didn't even look up from the game.
I know.
Then they went back to fantasy basketball, which was almost always a lot simpler than real life. The next practice was Tuesday night. Danny and the rest of the Rugrats, he couldn't get the name out of his head now, like they were a rock group, were waiting to get on the floor while the seventh grade girls' travel team finished their own practice. Will and Bren were on the stage, quietly dogging the girls as a way of entertaining each other, Will doing most of the talking, of course. Danny was up there with them for a few minutes, but then left, knowing that if they actually started bothering the girls, or were overheard by the girls' coach, Ms. Perry, one of the phys ed teachers from the high school, he'd be going down with them. He went and sat with the other guys on the floor. Richie Walker sat in a folding chair on the other side from them, legs stretched out in front of him, watching the girls. Danny walked over there when the girls went past 8 o'clock. Ms. Perry had shouted over and asked if it was all right if they went a few extra minutes, and Richie Walker said, go ahead, he was in no rush. Danny said, even they're better than us. Who is she? Richie said. Danny didn't have to ask who she meant. That's Colby. Colby Daines was out there doing what she always did in girls' basketball, which meant scoring all the points, getting all the rebounds, passing like she was ready at 12 to go play for the women's team at UConn or Tennessee or one of those other colleges where the women's team was better and more famous than the men's. Danny had always thought of her as the girl player that Ty would have been, almost as tall as Ty, with her red hair in a ponytail, smiling her way through practice even when she'd occasionally do something wrong.
Another tall St. Pat's girl.
Richie said, what do you think of her?
I think she's great, Danny said, for a girl.
She's great, period, Richie said. Those two knotheads making fun of her up on the stage ought to be paying attention to the way she plays, on account of they might learn something. With that, Richie spun around suddenly and stared straight at Bren and Will, as if training a searchlight on them. They both froze. Will with his mouth still open. Richie went back to staring at Colby Daines. Really staring.
Dad?
Huh?
You seem pretty interested in Colby.
I just like watching people who know how to play. Girls or boys, that's all.
Ms. Perry announced next basket and they were done for the night.
You think your friend Colby, I wouldn't really call her a friend, would like to practice with the boys sometime?
On the court, Colby got the ball near the basket and turned and made a baby hook over the girl guarding her, a Chinese girl from Springs, Emily Ming.
Dad, Danny said, what are you doing?
Doing what your mom said people should do more of in this town. Thinking outside the box.
But she's a girl, Danny said.
Yeah, Richie said. A girl who knows what to do when you pass her the ball. A girl who can catch it and shoot it and go get it. And can run the court on her long legs almost as fast as you can, Dan the man.
On the court, Ms. Perry blew her whistle and told the girls to bring it in. Danny's dad pulled himself out of his chair, picked up the bag of balls that had been sitting next to him.
You know what she is if we're strictly talking basketball here?
What? Danny said.
The girl of your dreams.
Richie talked to Ms. Perry first. Ms. Perry told him to ask Colby's dad, Dr. Daines, who was standing with the rest of the girl's parents at the other end of the gym. Then Richie was standing with Colby and Dr. Daines, and everybody was doing a lot of smiling and nodding, and before you knew it, Colby was in the layup line with Danny and the guys. Will whispered to Danny,
I knew nothing good was going to come out of Annika playing golf with the boys.
Behind them, Bren said,
This is just for practice, right?
Then Danny heard himself saying,
Let me ask you basketball geniuses a question. Could Colby make us any worse?
Okay, Will said. Walker has officially turned into the coach's son.
In the first 5 minutes of the scrimmage, she set a great pick on Will, rolled it off perfectly, and took a smooth bounce pass from Danny for a layup. Like Stockton and Malone, the pick and roll. Then she went down to the other end of the court, stole the ball from Michael Harden, passed it to Danny, who passed it right back to her, then watched as she beat everybody down the court for another easy layup. Danny looked over at his dad, still standing with Dr. Daines. Richie Walker, no expression on his face, shrugged. It went like that for half an hour, and then Dr. Daines yelled out to Colby that she had homework to do. Even that made Colby smile.
One more basket, she said. Please, Dad.
One more, but then that's it.
Danny brought the ball up. He passed it on the wing to Colby.
As she came up, Bren came from the other side and set a backpick on Oliver Towne, who was guarding her now. Colby left hand dribbled into the open near the foul line and had a wide open shot. When she went up for the shot, with everybody watching her, Danny cut for the basket from the other wing. Colby never stopped her shooting motion or seemed to even alter it as she went into the air, passing the ball off to Danny instead. He caught it and in the same motion, showing off a little, for a girl, made a little scoop shot from the left side. He looked over to see what Colby thought, but she was already walking over to her dad. When practice was over, Danny said to his dad, "Colby coming back?" "Thursday," he said.
"Who is going to pay for this great team of ours?" Danny said to his mom when he got home.
He'd asked his dad if he wanted to come in after practice, but he said he had to be somewhere. At 10 o'clock, Danny just assumed that somewhere had to be Runyon's bar.
"Your father wrote a check to the school for the gym time," his mom said. "I know that. Beyond that, if this thing keeps going forward, I assume he'll pass a hat with the parents for team uniforms, warm-ups, referees, and whatnot. I forget all the costs. It's been a couple of years since I was a travel basketball mom."
Allie Walker was sitting at the kitchen table, grading compositions. Danny had finished his homework and had been watching a show in the living room where the contestants tried to see how long they could keep live grasshoppers and crickets in their mouths. "Don't worry about money," she said. "Parents do that. You worry about school and sports. In that order, I might add." She looked up at him over her reading glasses, which always made her look more like Mrs. Walker the teacher than his mom. "Is there something else on your mind?"
"I was just wondering if Dad's going to stay at the inn the whole season, now that he's staying," Danny said. "He mentioned the other night that he might look into getting a small apartment somewhere, if it was cheaper than the inn. 'Cause I was thinking he could stay—"
"No," she said. "He could not stay here." She put down her reading glasses as she said it, for emphasis, a judge banging her gavel. Case closed.
"So he's okay for money right now?"
"He says he is, that he'd had a few good months doing those shows of his before he got here."
"You believe him?"
His mom said,
"You don't?"
It was somewhere between a question and an observation.
"I just don't know what this whole deal is about sometimes," he said.
"Well, I thought it was about putting together a team for a bunch of boys and girls. I think Dad's fixing to put Colby on the team." That stopped her.
"Your father is going to put a girl on his basketball team?"
"He didn't come right out and say it, but he let Colby practice tonight, and he says she's coming back on Thursday." Allie Walker said, "Will wonders never cease?"
"What's that mean?"
"It means your father, in his youth, was not exactly the biggest fan of girls' basketball. She's pretty good, you know."
"I know. For a girl."
Danny said,
"You were about to tell me something before I told you about Colby."
"I was just going to say that I thought this was a team for a bunch of kids who'd been told by a bunch of adults they weren't good enough." She gave him a long look, then said, "Or big enough."
"He wants us to prove a point, then?"
"Would you mind telling me what you're getting at here, Daniel Walker?"
"Sometimes I just think Dad's the one trying to prove some kind of point to somebody."
"Maybe it's to you," she said. "Ever think of that?" Danny's thinking was more along these lines. He wondered if the someone Richie Walker was trying to prove something to was himself. Crossover 2. "Hey, picture girl, you there?" Contessa 44. "We are here 24/7. Crossover 2. "Like those hotlines." Contessa 44. "For troubled teens." Crossover 2. "I've only got b-ball troubles." Contessa 44. "But I hear there's a new girl in your basketball life." It was true, Danny thought. News did travel faster than ever in the internet age. Crossover 2. "Who told?" Contessa 44. "I cannot reveal my source."
"Yes, I can. It was Will."
Crossover 2.
"He's got a big mouth even on a Mac. And she's not in my life. She's on my dopey team."
Contessa 44.
"Dopey? Uh-oh. Somebody's grumpy tonight."
Tess Hewitt wasn't just a fast typist. She was fast, period. Crossover 2.
"She won't change anything. We suck."
Contessa 44.
"You haven't even played a game yet."
Crossover 2. The only time I like playing ball is when I play with Ty. He waited longer than usual for her reply, which meant trouble, because the longer she took, usually, the longer the reply. But he was wrong. Contessa 44. Get over it. Crossover 2.
What?
Contessa 44.
Repeat, get over it. As in, all of it. Stop feeling so sorry for yourself.
Crossover 2.
Now you're my coach?
Contessa 44.
Just your IM cheerleader. But on to more important stuff. Do you think Colby's cute?
Danny felt himself smiling. Just not about the tall girl on his basketball team. He was smiling through all the magic of computers, all the mojo, his screen to her screen, all the way across Middletown, at this girl. Crossover 2.
No.
Contessa 44.
You're cute.
Crossover 2.
Gross.
Contessa 44.
Things will get better.
They were actually about to get worse. Chapter 13. First, the fight. He and Will had gone to the new Jackie Chan movie at the Middletown Theater, the one with the old-fashioned marquee out front, somehow hanging in there against all the multiplexes in the area, including the new one outside Twin Forks, in the Factory Outlet Mall that was roughly the same size as Texas. Danny's mom had brought him and Will's mom was supposed to pick them up at the Candy Kitchen afterward. That's where they ran into Teddy Moran and Jack Hardy and Fat Eric Buford. Will saw them come in, scoping out the room with his back to the wall in their back booth. He always sat facing the room, afraid he was going to miss something, even if it was only who'd just come through the door.
"Check it out," Will said. "Terrible Teddy actually found two people who wanted to go to the movies with him."
He said it in his boombox voice, as if everybody in the Candy Kitchen had suddenly gone deaf.
"You better repeat that," Danny said. "I think a couple of guys in the kitchen might have missed it." "Come on," Will said. "You're the one who always says that calling Moran a snake is insulting to a lot of innocent water moccasins."
There may have been less popular 12-year-olds in Middletown than Teddy Moran, whose father hosted his own show on the town's AM radio station, but if there were, Teddy was trying his hardest to take the crown. Somehow, Teddy thought his father's celebrity made him one, too. He went through life with even more mouth than Will, as if doing the play-by-play for himself and everybody else. He liked to think he had a lot of friends, but really didn't. In fact, if there was one enduring mystery in Middletown, at least among guys their age, it was this: why Ty Ross had anything to do with him. Danny just wrote it off to the fact that Ty would find good qualities in a guard dog. He even managed to do it with a punk face like Teddy, with those pig eyes, with a mouth set in a smirky way that made it look as if he were always on the verge of getting a flu shot. Teddy Moran, who always got a lot braver when he had somebody as big as Jack Hardy with him, even though Jack usually seemed to be embarrassed to be in the same area code. Danny was hoping that if he and Will ignored them, they'd go away. No such luck. Will hadn't just talked too loudly, he'd made the fatal mistake of eye contact. So the three of them came over and stood near the booth, Teddy in front of the other two. Danny thinking, "Yeah, Moran, you're a born leader."
"Hey, Walker," Teddy said. "Is it true you're playing with girls now?"
Looking over one shoulder, then the other, at Jack and Fat Buford, like he'd gotten off a good one. Will said,
"It's easier for us with girls than it is for you, just because they don't run the other way when they see us coming. Or in your case, smell us coming."
Teddy ignored him, saying to Danny,
"What color are your uniforms gonna be? Pink?"
Will said,
"Did somebody say punk?"
Danny leaned forward and sipped his root beer float, then looked up at Teddy.
"Is there some point you're getting to, dude? Or are you planning to go from booth to booth busting chops and just happen to start with us?"
Jack and Fat Buford turned and went to the counter to order, somehow bored by the sparkling conversation. Teddy stayed.
"Here you're spending a lot of time with Ross," he said.
"Jealous?"
Will said.
Teddy shot him a sideways glance.
"Nice hair," he said. "Come home with me later. You can scrub some of our dinner pots with your head." "Holy crap, that's a good one," Will said.
I've got to get a pencil from one of the waitresses and write that one down.
To Danny, Teddy said, one of these days, you and your pals have to get over not making the grade.
You're absolutely right, Moran,
Danny said, feeling himself starting to get hot now.
The other thing I've got to do is get my dad to sponsor the team next year, just to guarantee me a spot.
Garland Moran Station, WMID, was the Viking sponsor this season.
Your dad, Teddy said, sponsor a team? With what, his bar tips?
Will got up first.
Shut up, he said. Now!
Teddy Moran started to turn away from them on his way to the counter, but decided to say one more thing.
Loser coach, he said, for a loser team.
Danny, in a quiet voice, said, hey, Moran, to get his attention. So he'd turn. So Danny wasn't technically blindsiding him with what Will would describe later as a blinding first step, coming out of the booth and up into Teddy Moran, grabbing two fists worth of Teddy's stupid FUBU sweatshirt as he did, Teddy thinking FUBU made him a cool black-white kid, driving him back into the swivel chairs at the counter. Teddy was bigger and heavier than Danny, the way everybody was bigger and heavier, but his lack of guts made it a fair fight. The two of them went down in the opening at the counter where the waitresses brought out the food, Teddy hitting the floor hard as Danny heard people start to yell all around them, heard Teddy himself yelling,
get off me!
Danny was on top of him now, had him by the front of the sweatshirt, had his face close enough to smell movie popcorn on Teddy's breath. He could feel people trying to pull him off, but he wasn't ready to let go. Still wasn't sure whether he was going to bust him in the face and knock the smirk off it.
Take it back, he said.
He knew how lame it sounded as soon as he said it, but it was the best he could do. He could barely breathe, much less think clearly. Even now, Teddy was still all mouth.
About him being a drunk or a loser?
Now Danny pulled back his right hand, ready to pop him, see if that would finally shut his fat mouth. But Gus, the owner of the candy kitchen, the guy that kids considered the real mayor of Middletown, caught his hand like he was wearing a catcher's mitt and said,
how's about we don't make this worse than it already is?
Will finished the job of pulling Danny off Teddy Moran. Teddy was already on his feet, safely behind Jack and Fat Buford, a complete phony to the end, trying to make it look as if he were trying to get around them and back at Danny, and they were holding him back.
Truth hurts, huh, Walker?
He said. Will was moving Danny slowly toward the door.
You're the one who's going to get hurt, Danny said, when it's just you and me next time. You talk tough for a midget, Teddy said. Everybody in town knows the real truth about your old man except you.
Danny tried to turn around, but Will had him in a bear hug, saying, you're probably only grounded right now. Let's not shoot for life without parole. They stood on the corner, Danny breathing like crazy now, gulping in air like he'd just run a 100-yard dash. Will saying they ought to get out of there. He'd call his mom and tell her to pick them up at Fierro's.
I should have kicked his ass, Danny said.
Everybody in there thinks you already did.
They walked down the street. When they passed Runyon's, they saw Richie Walker at his usual corner stool, his face fixed on the television set. Danny didn't know what he was watching, but he recognized the look on his dad's face, the one where it looked as if he was staring hard at nothing, all the way into outer space. Danny staring hard at him. What had Teddy meant? The real truth? Danny was grounded for the next week, not even allowed to attend practices. He pleaded his case to his mom as soon as Mrs. Stoddard dropped him off at home that night, telling her what Teddy Moran had said, explaining that Teddy had lied when he told his mom that Danny had jumped him from behind. He knew it wasn't going to help his case even a little bit, but he finished by telling her that if anybody in town deserved to catch a good beating, it was Teddy Moran.
Are you finished now? Allie Walker said.
Pretty much, yeah.
You're right. He is a jerk. He happens to come from a long line of jerks, the biggest being his father.
And having told you that, you're still busted, kiddo. You know my position on fighting.
He did, reciting it to her now the way he would have the Pledge of Allegiance.
The only thing fighting ever proves is who's the better fighter, he said, and you usually know that before you start.
No phone privileges after dinner for a week. No after-homework television.
No computer of any kind unless it involved homework, which meant no instant messaging.
No, I am,
Will said at school on Monday, mock horror.
No tube? She's turned you into the Count of Monte Cristo.
What felt like one of the longest school weeks ever, no computer privileges always made him feel like he was stranded at night on some kind of desert island, finally came to an end. His dad stopped by Friday afternoon, telling him that he'd scheduled 6 games so far, the first one on the first weekend in December, the last of the 6 the Sunday before the Christmas holidays began. He also said that despite a lot of bitching and moaning, his dad's words, from Middletown basketball, Colby Daines was leaving the 7th grade girls' team and joining them. He was at the front door when he turned and said, "Oh, by the way, one other thing. We're scrimmaging the Vikings tomorrow afternoon at St. Pat's."
"We'll get killed," Danny said.
"I figure."
"You don't care?"
"Listen," he said. "I know they'll care, even though I'm not letting them use the scoreboard. They're not even supposed to keep score in a scorebook, though I figure they'll find a way. They're going to rub your faces in it. I just want to see what we've got and who I should be scheduling, especially if it turns out we don't get into the league."
"The league hasn't told you yet?"
"They say they're still, quote, considering my request, unquote."
"While they do, the Vikings get to use us as tackling dummies."
"It's just a scrimmage, not the Final Four."
Danny said, "More like a car wreck, if you ask me."
He felt like a jerk, talking about car accidents in front of his dad as soon as the words were out of his mouth. The stupid jerk of all jerks. Inside his stupid head, he pictured himself using both hands trying to grab the words out of the air and stuff them back inside his mouth.
"What I meant..."
"Relax," Richie said. "I know you didn't mean anything. But it's not a car wreck, kiddo. It's just basketball. I used to think it was a matter of life and death, too. I found out the hard way that it wasn't." It turned out to be a train wreck. Mr. Ross hired a couple of refs Danny recognized from 6th grade travel. Mr. Harden worked the clock. The Vikings wore black practice jerseys Danny didn't even know they had, with their own numbers on the backs and everything. Danny's team wore white t-shirts. No spectators, not even parents. Just the players, the 2 coaches, the 2 refs. In the huddle, Will said,
"The refs want to know what our team is called."
They all looked at each other.
Will said, "I never really thought Rugrats was all that catchy, to tell you the truth."
Danny said, "How about the Warriors?" He looked up at his dad.
"As in the Golden State Warriors."
For a moment, a blink of an eye, it was as if it were just the 2 of them, getting ready to play one-on-one in the driveway. His dad looked back at him and winked.
"Works for me," he said. "Warriors okay with the rest of you guys?"
"Why not?" Will said. "We'll be like the real Warriors, just much, much smaller."
Richie had them put their hands in the middle, told them not to worry about who was winning or by how much, to play hard, have fun, work on their stuff. When they broke the huddle and lined up to start, Danny looked around at the 5 starters for the Vikings, seeing how much bigger they were, knowing how much better they were. Then he leaned next to Will's ear and said,
"Holy crap, who picked these teams?"
The Vikings went with Ty, Jack Hardy, Andy Main, Daryl Mullins, Teddy Moran. Against Danny, Bren, Matt, Oliver, and Colby Daines. The only place where the Warriors had a height advantage of any kind was Matt against Jack, but that didn't mean squat. Jack Hardy was a better player in just about every way. Richie had Bren guard Teddy Moran. Danny took Andy Main, Colorado boy. As they all took their positions before the older ref, Tony, threw the ball up, Teddy walked close enough to Danny to say,
"I was wrong. This team needs more girls."
Somehow Matt got the opening tip from Jack, back-tapping it to Danny, who immediately put one finger in the air and yelled, "Syracuse!" It wasn't just the number one play in their offense. It was pretty much the only play, even if Richie had given them some options they could run, depending on how the defense reacted to it. Danny passed to Bren, then cut away from the ball and set a pick for Colby on the right wing. She was supposed to cut toward the free throw line if the pick worked, and Bren was supposed to pass it to her if she was open. If she wasn't open, Danny was Bren's second option, cutting right behind Colby.
The Vikings switched on her, so Danny got the ball back. He was supposed to look for Matt underneath, the way Colby would have. Because while they were doing their pick thing out top, Oliver Towne was supposed to be flashing across the baseline and picking Matt's man, Jack, and seeing if they could free Matt up for an easy layup. It happened just that way, exactly the way Richie Walker had drawn it up for them, the way it happened when he had walked them through it the first time they'd practiced together. Jack turned his head to see where Colby was after the first pick, even though Colby was covered. Oliver set a perfect screen, and Danny whipped the ball to Matt, who, amazingly, did two things that qualified him for his own personal book of world records. One, caught the ball cleanly. Two, made the layup. One more time, Danny thought, holy crap, we're winning. Even without a scoreboard, Danny had always been pretty good at keeping score in his head. Not just keeping score, but knowing how many points every player on the court had. He didn't know how he could do that, but he could, almost from the first time he started playing organized ball. Just another part of having a head for the game. But even he lost track now, as the Vikings scored either the next 30 or 32 points of the scrimmage. That meant between Matt's basket and the two free throws Danny made with 4 seconds left in the first half. Ty scored at least half of them, maybe more. The Vikings were doing fine just using their regular man-to-man, but then Mr. Ross had them put on their full-court press halfway through the first quarter, at which point they seemed to score 10 baskets in the next 20 seconds. The Vikings started double-teaming Danny in the backcourt as soon as he touched the ball. Instead of coming to help him out, the rest of the Warriors, with the exception of Colby, kept running away from the ball. When Danny would find somebody to pass it to, they hurried so much trying to get it right back to him, they usually threw it away, which usually meant another layup for the Vikings. When, by some miracle, the Warriors did manage to get the ball over half-court, the Vikings would double-team Danny there, daring anybody else on his team to make a stinking basket. While all this was going on, Teddy Moran was holding a non-stop trash-talking festival, as if he were winning the game single-handedly. It was all Danny could do to keep his cool. But he did, knowing that you couldn't pick a fight when you were getting your doors blown off this way. His dad tried calling a couple of timeouts. They didn't help. It was basically like trying to call a timeout right after somebody had yelled fire at a school assembly. At halftime, Richie told them for what felt like the 100th time to relax, telling them they knew how to play a lot better than this. Will raised a hand and said, "You absolutely sure about that, Coach?" "Mr. Harden talked to Mr. Ross," Richie said. "They're going to take the press off for the whole second half, and that one's on me. We didn't work enough on breaking the press. For now, try to stay with your man and do the best you can running the offense." Danny said, "What offense?" Richie gave him a look. "Hey." That's all it took. Danny felt like he'd gotten a good swat. "Sorry." "You knew these guys were better and bigger. They've had a lot more practice time than we've had, and most of them have been playing together a long time. Like I said, don't worry about what they're doing. Let's just work on our stuff. He almost used another S-word, didn't. The real S-word happened with about 5 minutes left in the game, as it turned out. There was 5:25 showing on the clock. Danny would remember the exact time when Mr. Ross called a timeout and put Ty and Teddy back into the game, after he'd sat the two of them for most of the second half. Danny had been out of the game since the middle of the third quarter, and had started to wonder if his dad was going to put him back in, or if he might be done for the day. But now his dad poked him and said, "Why don't you go guard your buddy?" "Ty?" "I was being sarcastic," Richie said. "Take the mouth." "You heard what he's been saying the whole game?" "I don't need to hear it. I can tell just by looking at his face," Richie said. "I've been playing against guys like that my whole life. The only way to shut them up is to shut them down. So go do that." After the substitutions, the Vikings took the ball out. Danny picked up Teddy as soon as he got the ball in the backcourt. Teddy put the ball on his hip and said, "Look, it's Stuart Little." But as soon as he put the ball on the floor, Danny took it from him, picking him clean off the dribble and taking it to the basket for a layup. Teddy didn't even try to catch him, whining to the second ref, Dwayne, the one who looked like a dead ringer for Snoop Dogg, that Danny had fouled him. Teddy let Ty bring the ball up next time,
Ty started the Viking offense on the left side, while Teddy ran to the right. He waited until Ty passed to Daryl Mullins in the left corner, figuring everybody was following the ball, including Danny, who was between his man and the ball the way he'd been taught. As soon as he turned his head, Teddy stepped up and hit him in the neck with an elbow. It felt like Teddy had hit him with a bat. He couldn't catch his breath for a